Cutting Audio. Deathlands.
Here it comes!
Outlanders.
Warning, meltdown imminent.
The Executioner.
Tag, you're it.
Stony Man.
Brace for impact!
Now playing at the theater in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, Timberlee Chanel, Thomas Penny, and Christopher Graybill. Deathlands 65, Hellbenders. The darkness began to clear. To Dean Cotter, it seemed, as though the swamp mist on the blackest of moon-clouded nights had begun to lift. He felt life return to his leaden limbs, and it seemed that his brain was beginning to work properly, bringing him back from the strange world of deep dark fears that surfaced during every Matt Trans jump. Feeling a well of nausea in the pit of his stomach, Dean rose slowly on one elbow, moving with care. The boy was the youngest of the band of seven people gathered in the Matt Trans chamber. Sitting upright, when he felt the spinning in his head begin to recede, he risked opening an eye and looked at his companions. His father Ryan was already on his feet, although still looking a little groggy. Dean had been told he resembled a younger, leaner version of the man. The boy risked rising to his feet. He was trembling slightly as he looked around the chamber. They'd obviously all been unconscious for some time. The discs that usually glowed before and after every jump were flat and colorless. He reached down and grasped his Browning High Power, the blaster that felt so comfortable in his grip, it was like an extension of his hand.
You okay, son?
A ghost of a smile crossed Ryan's face. The curling dark hair and serious countenance were mirrored in Dean, but the jagged scar that ran the length of the left side of his father's face, broken by the eye patch that covered the empty eye socket, was courtesy of the man's brother, Harvey, the now deceased former Baron of Front Royal. The boy grimaced as nausea returned at his sudden head movement.
Take some time, son. Who knows what's out there?
Ryan cast a glance at the chamber door, which would open out onto who knew what. Some redoubts they'd landed in had been occupied, some deserted, some providing food and shelter, some leaving them almost completely blocked off from the outside world. Beyond the sealed door of the chamber, automatically locked once the old comp terminals put the Mattrans programs into operation, could be anything, and they needed to be fully alert before they could risk taking a look. Beside Ryan, at his feet and beginning to regain consciousness as he spoke, was Christy Roth. Christy was a fellow fighter, Ryan's friend, and also his lover. A tall Amazonian woman, she opened startling green eyes on the world, still fogged slightly by the jump. She slowly began to rise.
Oh, that was a bad one, lover. It feels like we almost didn't make it. Ugh.
Every muscle in her body protested. Her long, flowing red hair hung freely over her shoulders. Ryan noted this and had a notion that outside the chamber, there was little immediate danger. Christy's hair was almost sentient, a result of her mutie genes, and could foretell danger ahead. It would curl in tightly to her neck and scalp, and warn of any approaching enemies.
We're here, and we're in one piece.
Just about, Dad.
Looking about, Dean could see that the other four members of the close-knit group that traversed the Deathlands were beginning to come around. J.B. Dix stirred, shifting from his slumped position until he was sitting with his back against the chamber wall. He reached out for the battered fedora that had slipped from his head.
Come to Papa.
With a satisfied smile, he placed the fedora firmly on his crown. Then he reached into one of his jacket's capacious pockets and withdrew his wire-framed spectacles, without which his vision was dangerously poor. He placed them on the bridge of his nose and pushed them up until they were in place, and then looked around at the chamber.
Mauve. I haven't seen many chambers with this color. Maybe this is a new one.
Oh, good Lord. Mauve? When did you become an interior designer?
Mildred Wyeth announced her return to consciousness. J.B., who'd replaced his hat and spectacles one-handed, disentangled the fingers of his other hand from Mildred's and began to replace his weapons in their holsters. The Uzi on his back, the Smith & Wesson M4000 shotgun, with its deadly load of barbed metal flechettes on one thigh, and the techno-knife in the scabbard at his waist. Ryan, who had a 6-hour pistol and Steyr rifle, as well as a razor-sharp panga, already had his weapons prepped. Christy, like Dean, had checked and holstered her 38 caliber Smith & Wesson 640 as a reflex, without even thinking about it.
How you feeling, Millie?
What sort of answer do you want? The truth? Or one where I don't cuss every word?
Mildred's brown eyes flashed with humor coming through the agony of awakening. She stretched, her normally dark skin taking on a gray pallor. Her long beaded plaits shook as she trembled, stretching every muscle that she could persuade to work.
Ugh, I swear, even getting thawed was better than this.
Dr. Mildred Wyeth was one of only two members of the group that had first-hand knowledge of the world before Skydark. In the late 20th century, she, as a working doctor herself, had to have a minor operation. There was no real risk, except that she developed a severe allergic reaction to the anesthetic. She was then cryogenically frozen until the problem could be sorted out. Then there came the new cost. So Mildred lay frozen for about 100 years until she was discovered by Ryan and his companions, who managed to revive her. Waking up into an alien world, Mildred's mental toughness had enabled her to cope with the sudden change, and her old life had also equipped her to cope with the dangers. She was a crack shot who had been an Olympic medalist for target shooting before the world had been nuked. She soon found that moving, breathing targets were as easy to hit when your life depended on it, and her checkmate ZKR pistol had become a part of her persona.
Ugh.
Mildred clambered to her feet, swaying slightly, as she adjusted to having all her atoms in their proper place once more. The part of her that had been a doctor still wondered what the constant tearing apart and reassembling of their atoms was doing to them, but the part of her that had adjusted to the new world figured it was a problem that, of necessity, had to be low on the list of priorities. Except when she looked across at the two remaining members of the group, the two who always had the most problems with the jump. For different reasons, Jack Lorne and Dr. Theophilus Tanner were the most physically vulnerable to the Matrans jump.
Ugh.
Jack was curled up in a fetal position on the floor. Tendrils of his stringy white hair were caked in vomit as it lay across his face. When he opened his red albino eyes, they were sightless at first. His whipcord-thin body seemed dwarfed by the camo trousers, heavy boots, and patched jacket that appeared to swallow up his small frame. Jack Lauren was a child of the bayous, whose hunting instincts and ability to chill had been honed by his early life in the swamplands. He'd proven his strength, speed, and cunning many times after joining Ryan's band, and his loyalty was beyond question. Mildred hurried over to Jack, bending to check his pulse. It was strong, but erratic. She stepped back as another stream of bile shot from his mouth.
Whoa!
Damn it, you nearly got me, Jack!
Sorry. Try harder next time.
Funny. So I guess you're feeling better then.
She helped him to sit upright, careful to avoid the hidden jagged metal and pieces of glass sewn into his jacket. As he adjusted himself into a sitting position, Jack took in his surroundings.
Made it.
Looks like it. At least I think so.
Mildred glanced over to where Doc Tanner lay. Beside him lay his weapons, the silver-tipped lion's head cane with a hidden blade, rapier thin, made of the finest tempered Toledo steel. Next to it sat the ancient Lamar percussion pistol with its double barrels, one of which was primed for a shot charge, the other for a huge, dense, and deadly ball. They were old weapons, but ones that in the hands of the skilled Doc Tanner were deadly.